there, everybody. It is Thursday, April 18th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send it on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Follow us on Twitter. You asked for us to have a Twitter account. Now we have one, so follow us there. Twitter, where your self-worth is dependent on the number of followers you have, so help us increase that number. And, of course, go to the Facebook and join the thousands of people who are liking us there. We have so much ground to cover on this week's show. We must get started with our first two guests, Thea Dodds and Catherine Hammer, the authors of the groundbreaking guidebook, Capturing Love, The Art of Lesbian and Gay Wedding Photography, featuring stunning example photographs from 38 of the top gay and lesbian wedding photographers and showcasing 46 same-sex couples. Capturing Love debunks the myth, which we are going to talk about, that same-sex couples are just like straight couples and can be photographed in the same way. Thea Dodds is an award-winning wedding photographer. She founded her firm Authentic Eye in 2004. Catherine Hamm is the president of GayWeddings.com, the leading online boutique and resource dedicated to serving same-sex couples. And they are both here with us now. Thea, Catherine, welcome to the show, So Gay.
Thank you. So thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Well, let's get started with just getting to know you both individually. Thea, let's start with you. How did you get into wedding photography?
Oh, goodness. It was kind of by accident. I actually got an art degree, and after college, I was working as a photojournalist, and that was a really tough lifestyle. And something that happened about 10 years ago is a lot of couples started hiring journalists to document their wedding rather than, wouldn't you think of that old school kind of wedding photography that was more like fairy tale style.
Yeah.
So I really fell into wedding photography accidentally. I never would have imagined myself being a wedding photographer. But it's a wonderful job. It's an honor, and it's great to have my job be going to parties. So
I would love that. I love the idea of you as like this embedded journalist at a wedding.
Right. Right. And that's really capturing the real moments at a wedding, the moments that matter. Rather than, again, the old school wedding photography, it was more about manufacturing emotion into the event, which really is already so emotionally rich.
Right.
You just have to be present enough to capture it.
How about those table shots, though? How do we make those creative?
Yeah. You can tilt the camera. I mean, you know, luckily, couples really invest a lot of time and energy into the aesthetic of their wedding. So for a photographer, it's really a joy to just show up and photograph. Everything has been set for us.
Yeah.
Everybody looks their best. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Now, we won't out you. No one's listening, so no one will hear you say this. Have you ever gone to a wedding, though, and you looked around and thought, I so would not have done it this way?
There's certainly some weddings, say the ones at the VFW hall with the fluorescent lights or something like that, are a little bit painful, a little bit more of a challenge to photograph. But, again, isn't that great that I get to be challenged? And every single wedding is different. And if it wasn't, I couldn't imagine doing this job. So boring.
I want you to go to a convention of journalists and this one say, oh, God, I was working in Afghanistan. And then you say, yeah, but you don't even know this wedding in Rhode Island I had to capture. That'd be great. Now, Catherine, GayWeddings.com, we enjoy that site immensely.
I'm so glad to hear it.
Now, there must be an assumption out there, of course, that it had to have been started by a gay person, but it actually was started by a mom and a mom that you know.
Right, isn't that amazing? I know her very well. One of the first people I ever met, actually, my straight mom.
Yeah.
Founded the business back in 1999. She's a Texas-based mom. And one who fits a little of that Steel Magnolia type profile. She couldn't find products for my wedding to my partner, and presumed that of course she could find it, and ran down to Crossroads, the gay bookstore in Dallas back then, and was stunned to find there wasn't anything, and that led to her opening our first boutiques. We were originally twobrides.com and twogrooms.com. And launched a business recognizing that there were couples who needed help. So it comes from a really beautiful place. We refer to them as mother-approved shopping sites for
lovely
couples, isn't it? And, you know, it was so great because especially back in the old days where we couldn't necessarily count on family approval. Families still weren't sure what to do about our weddings and our unions and our ceremonies and our relationships. So it was incredibly powerful to have this business that not only fulfilled a need, but it also brought a mother's love with it, saying, your union is good, and we love it, and we love you as you are, and we need more public celebrations. So I'm ridiculously proud of her, and it's been special to be a part of its story.
But is it hard to disagree with your mom?
You know what? It's too bad she's not on the call, because I think she'd say I have no problem with that.
And that's and not actually, surprising, you know, knowing Catherine.
See, Thea and I are like practically like an old married couple now. So, what I will say, it was actually pretty funny. My mom is an incredible visionary, and we have a very different skill sets, and that's part of, I think, what has made the business really rich. She has incredible taste and incredible vision, and we would often have something where she'd find a product and show it to me, and I would say, like, Mom, that is ridiculous. Like, there is no way that's going to sell. And sure enough, bing, we'd put it in the store and be off and running. So I would definitely, like, you know, eat crow, do the, like, you know, you were right, I was wrong. And we still to this day laugh about those things. So it's really great, actually, that I'm able to disagree with her. And it's also really awesome to find out that sometimes I'm really wrong. And I'm glad I've listened to her.
Nice, nice. And I'm sure she will appreciate you saying that.
Mother's Day is around the corner.
It's coming up. That's great. So she's going to ask, where's my present? And you're going to say, well, listen to this podcast. It was right there in it.
Well, and not just that. I'll say, hey, Mom, could you just tune into the That's So Gay podcast? So she can tell all her friends in Dallas. Oh, yeah, my daughter was just on That's So Gay.
Oh, not even the first time. It'll be great. It'll be great. Well, that brings us to talking about gay weddings. And I was reading, Thea, that you photographed your first gay wedding almost 10 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, a legally recognized gay wedding almost 10 years ago. Which is an honor of living in the Northeast at this point. And, you know, that very first gay wedding had so many firsts. It was the first gay wedding I'd ever attended. It was the first wedding I'd ever photographed where there was no wedding gown and there was no groom. And one of the big firsts of the wedding was the first kiss in the ceremony was the first time this couple had kissed in front of their family.
Wow.
And so it was all of these little things that made me start to think, whoa, this is different. And then working with the couple and trying to capture their, you know, their relationship, you know, on film to try and to photograph them in a way that communicates intimacy was challenging. First off, because I don't think they were terribly comfortable being intimate in public, which, again, was another first. Most of the couples I'd worked with previously were always comfortable being publicly affectionate on their wedding day.
Mm-hmm.
And then also posing them. I was using everything that I'd learned over the years, how to work with a couple, but it's all based on these assumptions of contrasting attire and physical differences, somebody being stronger, somebody being taller, somebody having broader shoulders. And I've found over the years with same-sex couples, you don't always get those physical differences.
Yeah.
So a lot of these rules really have to be reinvented.
And did you have any, on a personal level, when you got that first assignment, you know, when you were hired that first time to photograph a gay wedding, any anxiety there for you because you did indeed have to approach it differently?
Well, you know, I think I had no idea. You know, to me, I was like, okay, this is a wedding just like any other.
Right.
So I'm going to approach it the same way. I didn't think anything of it. And it was really, you know, in the heat of the moment, trying the things that I've done with every other couple and feeling like it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And this has continued over the years, photographing more and more gay couples. And now that in my home state of New Hampshire, now that it's legally recognized here too, there's been a huge influx of gay weddings in my area. And I've photographed more and more couples and having the same issue over and over and over. And I don't think my couples felt like they were being underserved, but I certainly felt like I was not completely happy with.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I really felt like I could do better.
Now, how did you two connect? Catherine, how did you and Thea connect to start working on this project?
It feels a little faded in many respects. We had actually connected through one of Thea's same-sex weddings that she submitted to our website, and That relationship and connection led to Thea, after having this insight that she's just sort of revealed and recognizing that there is a better way to photograph same-sex couples and trying to understand why that is and what that is, she picked up the phone and contacted me. And she can speak more to that about, you know, that my background in specializing in same-sex weddings and doing a lot of education across the market in all service categories, that for her it was certainly an opportunity to sort of test the idea to get a sense if it really, if it really would be something that could grow legs and run, and not just within the wedding trade, but certainly in the larger wedding marketplace. And I have to say that it was, this light bulb went off in our call, and she, most simply put, as Thea had said in her words, simply that weddings are changing and wedding photography education needs to change too. And it's as simple as that. And as we talked, and she talked to me more about what goes on behind the scenes, particularly in understanding wedding photography pose books and the ways that photographers educate themselves. As an educator myself, I couldn't help but see the connection, understand that this is something that's incredibly intuitive, but that nobody had put language to, and that we needed to do it, and we needed to do it quickly, particularly with the landscape shifting so dramatically with what happened in the fall in 2012 on Election Day, you know, rolling through this quite exciting spring as marriage equality gets a test at the Supreme Court level.
Yeah, because we want to be very clear, Thea, capturing love as much as you can put it on your coffee table as a coffee table book, this is very much a guidebook for photographers, a different way, you know, for everybody who wants to look at these photos and just gain some insight. But there's also a real practical element to this.
Yeah, we like to say it's an instructional book without being boring.
There you go.
And what's been great is that the number of different audiences that have really responded to this book, you know, from photographers to couples to parents, and this book is really remarkable on a number of different fronts. One being that it's the first ever collection of gay wedding photographs. I mean, forget about the text and everything it says. Just the fact that we're putting all of these images together in one collection is really powerful. And people enjoy that. Just at our launch event in D.C. last week,
mm-hmm.
A man came up while we were signing, and he said to me when he was planning his wedding, he was trying to imagine what it would be like for two grooms, and that he couldn't picture it because he had seen no pictures
right.
of it. And that really stuck with me to think about that, how the function of images in our society, and that the power of these images, and to give people that picture makes it okay.
Yeah.
Makes them understand it.
As an educator, as you said, Catherine, how do you approach tone? How do you go into this with a tone that you want to get across?
Well, in the book itself, I think we try to, from the instructional side, there are photographers that can hang their hats on some pretty concrete suggestions,
mm-hmm.
but we aren't using big words like f-stop and aperture that would send the rest of us running for the hills.
Right.
So it's very accessible in that level. It's not heavy-handed, but it's helpful, and that means that engaged couples then get a new language for what they might want to ask their photographers about as they plan their ceremonies. And then as Thea and I go about talking about capturing love, and as we introduce this conversation, and as you might imagine, the conversations that we have start in one place if we're somewhere like Manhattan or Washington, D.C. or California, and they start in another place if we're somewhere like Texas or Florida or Missouri. So,
right.
you know, while we are one big country and we are having a national conversation, the gap is more wide than it's ever been in how those conversations are happening. So, you know, I was a school counselor. I have a master's in social work. I'm someone that tends to want to bring everyone along and find the way where we can build for mutual ground. So the tone that I try to strike is one which says, you know, let's talk about responding, for example, to these photos and just thinking about some of the questions that the topic or these images raise for us and figuring out, if I'm talking with, for example, a wedding photographer from somewhere where same-sex marriage is not an easy topic to discuss still, giving them the room to say whatever they need to say about it. not to make anyone wrong, not to, to be, you know, really sort of intensely confrontational about it, but to really try to inspire a dialogue that helps people move to wherever they need to move toward what I would love to see, which is full marriage equality, or it otherwise helps them to ask the questions that they need to send them, to spend a little more time with it to get there when they can get there.
Great.
You know, and the win is the couples, the same-sex couples and the vendors, everyone gets to have their dignity intact. And it's not always easy. It doesn't always go perfectly, and not everyone agrees with that approach. But we really wrote this as a helpful crossover book so that people could get very concrete tools if they needed them. Or they might say, this book is beautiful, and we have had people have that response where they pick up the book and they say to us, this book moved me to tears.
Yeah.
And the fact, it is like one of the greatest compliments that I feel we could receive, that we put out something which truly is a book to teach photography skills, but people are emotionally moved because of the couples who are included in this book and because of the work of these incredibly talented photographers.
And I want to hype the work of these photographers because I think this is one of those things that I do not want to understate. Thea, talk to us about the importance of a wedding photographer. You know, this, someone's going in for the first time and they're shooting a same-sex wedding and they're thinking they're just, you know, part of the whole puzzle, but they don't really see the importance even as they're hired to do the job. Tell everyone about that role of the wedding photographer.
Yeah, well, I mean, the story that the wedding photographs tell is the way that the couple will remember their wedding day forever. And not just the couple themselves, but also any children, extended family. I mean, wedding photographs really have a place in our larger cultural context. And what I mean by the story that those photographs tell is that couples don't remember their wedding. Even right after the event, they may not remember the details because so much is going on. And that's really the importance of having a wedding photographer there to document those moments.
Right. What advice would you give to these up-and-coming wedding photographers?
Well, I mean, it's educate yourself. And in the end, the thing that you can't ever do at a wedding is practice. And the thing that you have to do to be prepared is practice.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a catch-22, and I really feel that this is a real strong piece to the wedding photography education that is out there. Professional photographers will get together, we will do seminars, we will go out on mock shoots, we will listen to people talk, we will share our work, because we're visual learners. This is how you learn to be a better photographer. Well, currently, there's absolutely nothing out there, no seminars, no workshops on how to work with a same-sex couple.
Mm.
So if photographers don't have an opportunity to practice outside of the event itself, that's not a good idea.
Right.
So that's really where, you know, that's the mission Catherine and I are on right now.
Right.
Is trying to get that out there so that photographers are practicing.
And if I may jump in here, Ken and Thea, this is one of the things that I am so excited about with this project, and something that when I'm out talking to wedding vendors out there in the market, and I'm saying, look, if you listen to what we're saying and you think about, essentially deconstruct how you're approaching your couples, and you add the filter of thinking about same-sex couples and what their needs are, the great advantage is that you are going to better serve all of your couples, regardless of sexual orientation. And that's because what we're asking is that you be present in the authentic moment, take a look at the individual couple in front of you, and then work with them to help them with the ways in which they envision their big day happening. So I see this as a win. And so to the question of what do you say, how do you teach, what advice do you give to young upcoming photographers, it's to think about capturing love relative to how you might better serve same-sex couples, but please take some of those lessons with you because you might find that you're going to take care of many of your heterosexual couples as well.
Great. Great. And you mentioned, Catherine, you gave a shout-out to the current climate right now around marriage equality. I mean, every book exists in some sort of context, but holy cow, does capturing love exist in a context right now. How do you even begin to wrap your mind around placing this really important text within the wider context of everything that we're dealing with right now?
Well, it's a real gift, and I tell Thea thank you, I think, every day after I also say a lot of other things about what I think we need to do next. But I am so grateful to her for calling me when she did, because this has been a culmination and a trajectory in our work, and meaning from gayweddings.com from that perspective. And we've had plenty of great ideas along the way, but they haven't always come at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's really exciting about this is the market, the larger market, which has really become more open to having a conversation about same-sex marriages and same-sex unions. But it's all been about being gay-friendly. It's been about people opening their hearts and minds a little more to same-sex couples. But there are so many couples getting married and tying the knot, and so many more options. And the problem is, while vendors may have opened their hearts and minds, they haven't necessarily done the education, part
right.
of which you heard Thea articulate so beautifully. And so to have this visual book come at a time when the mainstream is ready to have a bigger conversation, that it communicates in a powerful way, but on top of it, it brings very specific information. All I can say is I feel incredibly grateful to Thea for picking up the phone to call me, because this is a project that in many respects I felt very ready for, but by the same token, her timing was impeccable. And, you know, to be, sort of fully honest, this is part of why we chose to self-publish, is we understood that this was a very important book and we needed to do it right, and we couldn't let it languish making the rounds in publishing shops, that we knew it needed to be out and it needed to get out now.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Now, Thea, this goes against everything that we are about at the show, and I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to out you, and I'm going to out you just in case anyone's making any assumptions. You are indeed straight, are you not?
I am. I am straight, but I'm also unmarried, and I live with my male partner and our two children. And at one point, we said we were holding off on marriage until it was something that everybody had access to. And I think I'm going to stick with that.
Great.
Even though I've been harassing her, she has to hear from me every other day about, like, when are you going to get legally married, Thea? Come on.
As long as neither of us die, it's okay. But when death comes into the picture and you have kids, it really is a sad reality of the benefits that your family does not have. But I do feel strongly that it just seems wrong to take advantage of something that not everybody has access to.
Right. There you go.
I want to just add for Thea, because, I mean, she's a straight girl who can hang, in case your listeners haven't already picked up on it. It has been such a treat to work with her, and I would say she passes quite nicely. And I love that we have gotten to work together. It's been a lot of fun.
I love that. I love that you can pass, Thea.
Yes.
Now, you both have been doing a ton of events. Talk to me about these. You mentioned briefly, folks have come up to you, but Thea, what have your experiences been? Just, it's one thing putting a book together, and it's another going through the self-publishing route, but then there comes that amazing part where it's actually in people's hands.
Yes.
What has that been like?
Yes, and just like Catherine said, just the response we've gotten is wonderful. It's incredibly positive, and people are emotionally responding to it, and all kinds of people. Even though we thought we were writing this book for photographers as our primary audience, I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. It's such a diverse group of people are responding to it. And it has been wonderful to see that. As I've been out traveling, this year I have been to Atlanta, I have been to Las Vegas, I've been to Washington, D.C., Boston, all promoting this book, and in every single city we've been to, we've met people from all over, not just the country, but all over the world, and across the board, positive response. And this is even, it's fascinating when I talk to people from Texas or I talk to people from Alabama, and they tell me about the gay weddings happening in their area. That just is so surprising to me, living in an area where it's legally recognized gay weddings is been my only experience. And in doing this book, I've learned that, what do you know, gay weddings happen everywhere, regardless of the legal standing.
Love it. Love it. Now, we got to do some self-promotion. Catherine, tell everyone where they can get the book.
Absolutely. Well, the best place to figure out all places is at our website, www.capturingloveguide.com. And I want to give a little special advice to your listeners, and that is that come to our site and you can buy a special edition hardcover copy of the book, which is currently only available through us. It's $34.95, and it is absolutely gorgeous. You can also find our book via Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Lulu. All of those links for a quick link are available via our website. We would also hope that any of you out there listening to us today go to your local bookstores, Barnes & Noble, the independent bookstore, and ask them to carry our book. And, this is the part where we really rely on folks to get the good word out there about us so that our book will continue to gain traction and more people who need this book will get it in their hands.
I already went to my little local Vermont bookstore and asked them to pick it up.
And how did that go?
Oh, they'll order it. They're so good about that.
Yay!
It's Vermont. It's what we do. And what about for the two of you, Thea, what if people want to hire you as their photographer? Where should they go?
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? They should go to AuthenticEye.com.
Nice.
And that is eye, like your eyeball, E-Y-E.
Nice.
Can I just add a plug? I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of Thea's, but I just watched her work in Washington, D.C., where she met a series of couples and did sessions in 30 minutes time, which is very difficult to get people to warm up and get comfortable in front of the camera. And the work that she produced in those quick moments, public moments, it's just breathtaking.
Oh.
She is outstanding. So I can't say enough great things about booking her. She knows what she's doing.
Well, she likes you too. She told me so.
She did say that?
I heard it in her voice. I heard it in her voice. Because she would want everyone to also go to gayweddings.com.
You got it.
Please do.
And right there, my assumption is you can just hire out Supermom Gretchen and she'll just come to your house and help you.
Wouldn't that be amazing? She's such a big fan. I will tell you, when she was first doing this and before I joined full time, I just laughed and laughed because she would get on the phone, help a couple, and by the end of the 30 minutes or whatever it was, they invited her to her wedding. That's the kind of mom she is.
Love it.
Unbelievable.
Right? I love it.
If I could add one more thing.
Yeah.
Because we are on Facebook. At Capturing Love, so www.facebook.com/capturinglove. And today, or I should say this week, is the week that everyone has had to wrestle with their tax returns or file extensions, their chip choice.
Yeah.
And we've launched a campaign called What a Picture is Worth, because we all know that a picture is worth 1,000 words, but many of the pictures and most of the pictures in Capturing Love are actually also worth 1,138 federal rights.
That they are.
You can see some of these great images, and we're asking folks to help raise awareness about why marriage equality matters and to please take those images, share them, and if you'd like to actually add your own picture of you and your partner to be a part of this campaign, we welcome that, and you can do it yourself or contact us, and we'll help you get it done.
What if it's a picture of me watching someone else get married? That's all I got right now, folks.
I am open to creativity because basically I want you to have those rights too, my friend.
I'm trying to get in the book, people. I'm trying to get in the next version. Well, look, the reason I love this project and the reason everybody needs to go out there and pick up a copy of Capturing Love, The Art of Lesbian and Gay Wedding Photography, is that I love that you are putting out there, and you said it in one of your quotes, Thea, that it's not just plug and play, that you don't just show up at a wedding and, oh, fine, it's two grooms. That's the same as a bride and a groom. Two brides, that's the same as a bride and groom, because it's not. And there's a whole different lens that we all use to look at an LGBT wedding, and that's okay. It's actually okay to highlight those differences and to celebrate them. And your book really is as much as a guidebook and as much as a great read, it's also a celebration. And we're just so appreciative that you both partnered up to put this together, to put it out there to everybody else.
Well, thank you so much. You hit so many different key points right there.
Nice. Everyone, go pick up a copy of Capturing Love, The Art of Lesbian and Gay Wedding Photography. If it is not in your local bookstore, ask them to please order it. Thea, Catherine, what a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Ken. It was great.
He is now to be among you at the calling of your heart. Rest assured it's true. His part. The union of your spirit here has caused him to remain. For whenever two or more of you are gathered in his name, there is love. There is love. Thank you. man shall leave his mother and a woman leave her home. They shall travel on to where the two shall be as one. As it was in the beginning, is now until the end. Woman draws her life from man.
Folks, and we are back. Hello, Snarfly Jody.
Hello, Nod.
Is that right? Snarfly?
Snarfly. That's what I said, yes.
Okay.
A little bit.
Are you sick?
No, it's allergies.
Oh.
Which means spring is really here, so I guess I should be happy.
Okay.
Actually.
There were koi in that pond right outside.
There were, I know.
There weren't, folks. Jody
no, there
was
were.
Just seeing them, and
no.
Nobody else was seeing them. Well, so much ground to cover for this week's show. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to talk about. I did write a new Huffington Post piece, as I said I would, about the Day of Silence.
Oh.
But yeah. It kind of got lost in the, as it should have, in the coverage of the Boston Marathon tragedy.
Yeah.
And I just didn't even feel like it came out the day that that happened.
Ew.
So then I didn't promote it. And I sent out maybe a post or two yesterday, the day after.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it getting lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
I did say that I was kind of anti-Day of Silence, but I've said that on the show before. You can go to our Facebook page, type in the show, and you can read that piece there. But I'm okay with that getting lost in the shuffle this week.
Yeah.
So. But we have many stories to talk about. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
A woman in Idaho was cited for trespassing.
Where?
Where do you think?
Well, in Idaho, but...
I wasn't testing you to say, like, we're in Idaho. No, she was trespassing for using the women's bathroom in a grocery store.
Oh.
We were just talking about this earlier today.
Yes, we were.
Allie Robledo was cited April 8th after leaving Rosauer's grocery store in Lewiston, Idaho. And the Lewiston police captain, Roger Lanier, he said, quote, a male subject was using the female restroom, and that made some women customers uncomfortable because of the appearance that a male was using their restroom. Robledo told the station that she'd already undergone one gender reassignment surgery. In the past, Robledo said using male restrooms led to feelings of embarrassment and harassment, and that she sometimes feared for her safety.
Yep.
She said, quote, I'm a female trapped in a man's body. It's natural for me to go to the ladies' room. Getting the no trespassing order for a public restroom was really painful.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, quite.
So customers had complained because someone was urinating standing up. Think Progress, the great organization Think Progress, notes that Idaho is one of 37 states that do not offer non-discrimination protections for trans Americans.
Mm.
You want to keep talking about bathrooms? We can keep talking about bathrooms.
I hate the bathroom thing.
I know.
I really, really, really hate it. It especially single occupancy bathrooms.
Right.
I understand that there need to be, for a lot of Americans and a lot of people in general, for the multi-stall, there needs to be some sort of assurance of who's going in and who's not going in. But there also needs to be these better options for folks where, whether it's the family bathroom or whether it's the single occupancy bathroom, that are all gendered.
Right.
They are all gendered. And having bathrooms that are single occupancy that are only male and female does not make any sense to me. And it also doesn't make any sense for people to make a stink about anyone who's trying to go into a single occupancy bathroom.
Right.
I just don't get it.
Well, our politicians are certainly spending some time on this. So they connected this story in Idaho to a few national stories that have come out in the past couple of months. In February, Representative John Kavanaugh, who's a Republican, he proposed an amendment. This is in Arizona. Uh-huh. He proposed an amendment that would prohibit a person from entering a, quote, public restroom, bathroom, shower, bath, dressing room, or locker room with a biological identity not matching the facility's official gender association. He does not specify single occupancy or multi-stall or whatnot. This goes along with Michigan State Representative Tom McMillan, also Republican, who said just last week there's a bill that's offering protections for trans Michigan residents, but he feels that it, quote, violates the privacy rights of women and children. He continues in this quote. He said, why the city would want to force places like schools, businesses, and fitness centers to allow men to use a women's restroom or locker room and allow boys to access girls' restrooms and locker rooms in schools is beyond me. He kept going. At the very least, the council should have also included a requirement for warning signs on women's and girls' public restrooms and locker rooms doors saying that women and girls may be confronted there by men who think they are women.
Ah, no! Ah.
So there's a couple pieces of this. First of all, he does not even make room for the idea that there could possibly be trans men.
Yeah, he just completely denies the existence of any trans anything.
Right.
He's just not acknowledging that trans is a viable anything.
Right.
At all. Identity.
And he puts it in the context, of course, of some sort of sexual misconduct and some sort of threatening behavior. But then, to be fair, not to him, but to people who say, oh, you know, Ken and Jody are so advanced and they know everything. We are certainly working at the... I just said that. Not of other people. Well, I mean, you know, for anyone who feels that we're being preachy or condescending or anything
okay,
like that,
okay,
we
okay.
are working at a campus, Marlboro College, which right this second has single occupancy bathrooms that are gendered.
Yes, in the library, which I just asked to have that signage removed,
yeah.
And it is very likely to be removed.
And we will update people on that, but it's not like, you know, I'm of both minds. On the one hand, it's not like this doesn't exist in so many different places, even places
right.
that consider themselves to be liberal bastions of the community, like Marlboro College.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, as Jody just said, it took one statement at a meeting to likely change this.
Right.
It doesn't take all that much.
Right.
So you can change these things. So look around on your campuses or your workplace or whatever it may be. If there's single occupancy, and you can have larger conversations about multi-occupancy bathrooms, but
right.
I will say it is a lot easier to start out having the conversation about the single occupancy ones.
Right, right.
So that's a place to start. So moving from all of those states to Hawaii.
Mm.
Have you been to Hawaii?
Not yet. I'd like
Do you want to go?
Someday, yeah.
Seems like a nice place.
Yeah.
A judge in Hawaii's First Circuit has ruled that the Aloha Bed and Breakfast in Hawaii Kai was violating state law when it discriminated against a same-sex couple, and that court imposed an injunction preventing them from ever doing so again. Lambda Legal, we love Lambda Legal. We've got to get Lambda Legal representatives on the show. They represented the couple. The couple's names are Diane Cervelli and Taeko Bufford. And the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission also joined the suit. But here's, I got to read you some of the quotes.
Okay.
This is great.
Okay.
So the couple was visiting a close friend and their newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
Or the couple's friend's newborn baby. I don't think that's really pertaining to the story. But the important piece is they contacted the Aloha Bed and Breakfast because it was near where the friend lived.
Right.
When they asked for a single bed,
yeah.
Phyllis Young, the owner of the Aloha Bed and Breakfast, and doesn't that also mean, oh no, I'm thinking shalom. Maybe it means peace too. I know it means a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But I think it's a misnomer. Owner Phyllis Young asked if they were a lesbian couple. And when they confirmed that they were, Phyllis Young said she was uncomfortable having lesbians in her house because of her religious views. During the investigation, Young admitted that she turned the couple away because she believes that same-sex relationships are, quote, detestable. That's not the good quote. And
yes. Oh, God.
Much like salt on crops. She didn't say this.
What?
I'm saying that. She said,
oh, jeez.
Sorry. She said, quote, that lesbian relationships defile the land.
Wow.
To which I add, much like salt
on crops. Yeah.
Is that true? You garden salt on crops. That's bad, right?
Salt on crops is very bad. Yeah. It's why you don't salt dirt roads.
I know that
leach.
From Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because when they had to get rid of the initiative, they salted the earth. But I don't know if it was a metaphor or not.
I think it was more of a salting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes, lesbian relations. I have often, after you and your lovely wife have walked down the streets of Brattleboro, thought, well, there's some land defiling.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You leave a trail in your wake.
Yes, of salty tears.
I often, when you guys walk down the street, I look behind you and think, no crops will flourish ever.
No, because there's a sidewalk there.
But I've often thought that you should be banned from the farmer's market.
Right. Yeah. Try Defile that with all of
the land.
The farmer's market, which is probably, and I'm going to say this is, you know, a lowball estimate, 50% queer, I would say. Queer identified in some way.
Do you walk out of here thinking like, okay, so now I've heard that. I need to process someone saying that lesbians defile the land.
Yeah, it's... I mean, that's...
It really is remarkable.
It is remarkable and really hardcore. Like, how does this person go around in her day and...
As a business owner.
As a business owner, having to deal with other businesses and other vendors who may be queer identified in some way without thinking, oh, I may be defiled by speaking on the phone with that possible gay florist that I deal with.
I think it's going to be our new tagline. This show is so gay. Defiling the land since 2008.
Defiling the airwaves.
I might do that.
Ooh.
All right, we'll come up with a tagline again. Now, the interesting thing, which is kind of depressing, and I know this is the way the law works and the court system works, this happened in 2007, and this ruling just came down, and that's how long it takes.
That's long.
I know, right? So Hawaii first passed their LGBT non-discrimination protections in public accommodations in 2006. This happened in 2007. Mm. The law stipulates that it is illegal to refuse services based on sexual orientation.
Right. Hello. Right. Yeah.
Notably, Hawaii does not have same-sex marriage, so though conservatives have already started to claim that this lawsuit victory, quote, tramples religious liberty, they cannot claim this case has anything to do with the advance of marriage equality. Instead, it's a clear example of how religious beliefs simply do not justify blatant discrimination.
Yeah.
So I want to read you some quotes.
Okay. Ooh, more quotes.
This is great.
Okay.
It gets even better. Quote, when Martin Luther King Jr. called on the nation to live up to the meaning of its creed, he heard an echo from 1,000 pulpits. Treating black folks decently was consistent with what Christians had been taught. Dr. King was pushing against an open door. Priests and pastors marched for civil rights. Others preached for civil rights. But if the gay rights agenda is imposed, we could have priests and pastors preaching non-acceptance, not acceptance, but principled rejection. I'm going to skip a little bit. The culture war in America today may be seen as squabbles in a daycare center compared to what is coming. A new era of civil disobedience may be at hand.
What?
That is Pat Buchanan, our buddy Pat Buchanan, who I read that because it's almost remarkable how he is not just comparing struggling against LGBT equality to the civil rights movement.
Right, yeah.
But he is saying we might actually have to do like black people did and preachers and pastors who were calling for racial equalities did and practice civil disobedience to keep the gays from getting their rights. He is saying
so
we might have to do like they did back then to achieve equality.
Right.
In this instance, to discriminate.
Right.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I bet if that was a geometric proof, he would get an F because it doesn't follow.
That is amazing. I love that story.
Wow.
I love that story.
Wow.
Now, I covered this on last week's show. You were not here for it.
I
might have covered it by myself.
Okay.
It happens sometimes. Sounds really dirty. But no, it doesn't. It doesn't sound good. Matt Salmon, I'm moving past that. Representative Matt Salmon, who's a Republican in Arizona, he is one of these folks who has a gay son.
Okay.
But he is the guy, you and I actually did cover this in a sentence.
Okay.
It was when we had no time left when we were telling coming out stories.
Oh.
And he was the representative who said, even though my son is gay, I'm not changing my views on gay marriage.
Yeah.
And we were commenting how, you know, remarkable that is given how all the studies say once you know someone who's gay, it usually changes your views.
Right.
So his son, who's also Matt Salmon, Matt R. Salmon, is now saying, and I said this last week, he did this, he's been doing all these interviews and saying, oh, it's totally okay that my dad is not changing his mind. Mm-hmm. It's okay. He's a great dad. Mm-hmm. And he made me go to reparative therapy. And now he's taking the next step, and he told Anderson Cooper this week that not only did he go to reparative therapy, which he's been saying, but it helped. It helped him.
Okay.
He said, this is what he said. Looking back, I don't regret it. And he's talking about his experiences with reparative therapy.
Uh-huh.
Looking back, I don't regret it. The goal was to become straight, and it turns out what I took away from it was an increased confidence. And so I get that. Oh, wait, he goes on. Let me add more.
Okay.
He adds, quote, a big part of it was really teaching me to make relationships with straight men because that would help me to kind of take on this straightness. And so it really helped me actually learn how to talk with men. So I get that he's trying to not, like, blast his dad, and he's saying,
sure.
But I have a problem with him going on there and saying, you know, ultimately, reparative therapy, it was good.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah,
it didn't turn me straight, and sure, he's not saying that it
turned
him straight.
Right, right,
but I have a problem with him saying, oh, yeah, it was good.
He would have...
I took something positive.
Been better in just regular therapy.
Right.
Yeah, because he could learn the same thing.
So I hate that story.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And I didn't watch it. I was just reading it, so
yeah.
I don't know what Anderson Cooper's response was.
Yeah.
But I don't like it.
I mean, I do respect his ability and desire to frame something positive out of what would predominantly be viewed as completely, utterly negative.
Right.
And I'm guessing it's out of love for his dad. To try and not have him look so evil and manipulative.
Right.
But
within the context of so many states trying to pass referendums
against it.
I know.
It's really unfortunate, yeah. But yeah.
In, where are we? Clintonville. In Clintonville, which is actually in Ohio.
Okay.
When Bishop Waterston High School teacher Carla Hale...
Okay.
Returned to work last month after her mother's death,
mm-hmm.
administrators at the Catholic school in Clintonville confronted her with a letter.
Mm-hmm.
An anonymous parent had written to the Roman Catholic Diocese of Columbus, appalled that Hale had listed her female partner's name in her mother's obituary.
Mm.
So they fired her.
Oh, come on.
I mean, your mom dies. Your partner's name is in the obituary. And then you get fired.
Wow.
Students and other supporters recently caught wind of the firing, and this past Monday, a petition was initiated on change.org to seek Hale's reinstatement. It gained about 4,000 signatures already, and it's going up and up and up. The petition says, quote, the school claims its mission is to teach its students about love, acceptance, and tolerance, and yet it did none of this in the way that it treated Ms. Hale.
Yeah.
Ms. Hale said, quote, it's amazing that they've come together and rallied around this situation. I'm in awe of them.
Hmm.
According to a contract between the Columbus Diocese and the Central Ohio Association of Catholic Educators, teachers can be terminated for, quote, immorality or, quote, serious unethical conduct or, quote, defiling the land. Okay, that's not a quote. I just wanted to add that in. George Jones, a spokesman for the diocese, had no comment because they never do, saying personnel matters are confidential. And then there's all of these different quotes from the students. I actually had it in mind, but we don't have a ton of time to read the whole thing. It's really quite an inspiring article, but it's, yeah. Peter Clark of Powell, a 2011 Waterston graduate, said Hale was a compassionate, understanding teacher who was fired for something that, quote, has nothing to do with education. He went on to say, quote, it's a disgusting display of hypocrisy by the education system that I was once so proud of.
Mm.
Your mom dies.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Can
you imagine?
That's just so horrible.
And that was, by the way, that's how they found out.
Right. Yeah.
The obituary.
This is so horrible.
And someone read the obituary.
Someone read it and complained. And then what was the meeting? Like, I want to know what was the meeting that happened where this decision was laid out? You know, who was in the room? How did they talk about it? And did anyone say, wow, this might be really horrible? In general, it's really horrible, but her mom just died.
Right.
And what are we doing?
Right.
We're going to fire her.
Don't you think that they so quickly moved past the part where this is where we found out this information?
I'm sure they did.
I think it was like we heard from someone. It doesn't even matter where. The point is
we heard.
She's defiling the school land and we need to get rid of her.
Oh my God.
Isn't that unbelievable?
It is unbelievable.
So we will see if she gets reinstated. We will see if she gets reinstated.
You know, I would actually even suggest that some of those folks send something right on up to this new Pope. And I know he's not gay positive, but he is in, he fights
he seems
injustice.
To be change positive.
He's change positive and he fights injustice. And this is certainly something that is quite unjust. I don't know.
Students said they knew or suspected that Hale was gay, but she did not discuss her lifestyle with students or espouse same-sex issues. Hale is a practicing Methodist. She said that she hopes the reaction to her dismissal spurs Catholic leaders to reconsider their stance on gay relationships. I said I hope they reinstate her, but she might not want to be reinstated.
Right.
She is a physical education teacher who taught there for 19 years.
Oh,
19 years.
19 years.
She said that she filed a grievance under the terms of the contract. Oh, sorry. She filed a grievance under the terms of the contract seeking her job back.
Good. Well, good.
Yeah. Although I do want to say this. When we had Kathy Renna on, Kathy Renna, who's one of our go-to gays, and she does a lot in PR and whatnot. And she actually is, she brought us our two guests earlier in the show, Capturing, who wrote this book, Capturing Love, about gay and lesbian weddings and photography at gay and lesbian weddings. Talked to Kathy about one of the stories, and I honestly, I can't even remember the context of the stories, but it was, I know it was about military spouses and a military spouse was denied benefits, and the article went out of its way to say they had been married for 16 years, they had two kids, and I felt like the article justified the benefits because they had been married for that amount of time. And so I remember I had said to Kathy, and folks, you can go to theshowsokay.com and click on Kathy Renna on the guest part. And the last time she was on, we talked about this. And I said, in the same way that we're saying, oh, she taught there for 19 years, I feel like we need to pause and say, and even if she had taught there for 6 months.
True. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I get so worried about some of these stories. And this, of course, these are the ones that hit the press. Because they are palatable in that way that it's like, oh my gosh, that's the same as a straight relationship could be.
Well, the other piece that just makes it a little bit more reprehensible because of the length of time, that means that school district and that school personnel had a relationship with her.
Oh, they knew.
Like a deep relationship with her.
They knew.
So, yeah, they knew. Yeah. They knew.
I agree. That's totally correct. That's totally correct. And so this was a parent calling, and you and I know when a parent calls, not so fun.
No, no, it's not.
Unless it's a parent of one of our current students listening right now, in which case we love hearing from you.
Well, and sometimes we have very nice chats too.
And sometimes we have very nice chats. But yeah, they totally knew. After 19 years, there's no way that they didn't know. So that's kind of yucky.
It is yucky.
Hey, in New Zealand, they now have same-sex marriage, so that's happy.
Yay, that's very happy.
So I'm just putting that out there. Hundreds of jubilant gay rights advocates celebrated at New Zealand's parliament this past Wednesday, as the country became the 13th in the world and the first in the Asia-Pacific region to legalize same-sex marriage. Lawmakers voted 77-44 in favor of the gay marriage bill.
Yay.
Now, I am imploring you to watch, and I'm going to try to get the filmmaker on the show, 17-year-old Kim Ho. Mm-hmm. He is one of the winners of the 2012 monologue competition Love Bites, held by Fresh Ink. And it's for emerging playwrights from the Australian Theatre for Young People. Might be hard for me to get him on the show, but there is a 9-minute video. Mm-hmm. The entire film that he made is 9 minutes. It is on YouTube. It's called The Language of Love.
Okay.
They cover it in The Advocate, and he says homosexuality is still a sensitive topic, and I immediately felt pressure to write something that was candid but not disrespectful to the LGBT community. I wanted to write something that would make me cry, just like the stunning It's Time advertisement. You saw that one, right?
No.
Oh, Jody.
No,
I'll forward that to you as well. Okay. It's a really short commercial that came out of Australia that's been viewed like many, many, many millions of times. But it's a beautiful ad. And I totally cried when I watched this. It's in fact, the credits start at 9 minutes. So it's even a little bit shorter than that.
Okay.
But I encourage people to type in The Language of Love. And you can watch this full 9 minutes on YouTube. It is lovely.
Okay.
It is quite lovely.
I will watch it.
And I am going to play the song that's going to play us out at the end of the show. And I posted about this on, I think, our Twitter account and on my Facebook page. I have to say, the Whale and Jennies, who I know you enjoy as well.
Love them.
Voice.
Yes.
Got me through this week.
Oh, it's such a good song.
Because the media coverage was, all the Boston stuff was really difficult to.
Yeah.
And I don't watch much the cable news channels, but I did. Mm-hmm. And it was just a loop of, it was horrible. And so I listened to the song. Anybody who lives above me, and we know who lives above me in my apartment building, I was just singing at the top of my lungs. But
yeah.
I'm gonna play that this week. I never know. Is there an LGBT connection to the Whale and Jennies?
Not specifically.
Okay.
Just sort of they love humans.
They love humans.
They do.
Okay. So I'm gonna play the Whale and Jennies in just a few seconds, because that about wraps things up for this week's show. On next week's show, we will be talking to some of the folks involved with OutTraveler.com.
Oh,
so we're going to talk about traveling. And we are going to be introducing a new segment to the show.
Whoa!
New segment. Fun. And it's going to be called Ask Dr. Frankie. And Dr. Frankie Bashan, who's been on the show 3, 4, 5 times, I don't even know at this point, we will now be adding a section on our website where you can submit your LGBT relationship questions to Dr. Frankie. And then she and I will answer those questions. I'm not going to answer them. I'm going to pose them.
Right,
don't want me answering them. My answer is just going to be deal with it.
Yeah.
So we will be doing that, and that will be on our website. So you can, of course, stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Twitter, as I say at the start of each show, where your self-worth has a direct relationship to the number of followers you have. So please increase our number of followers so we feel better about ourselves. And of course, drop us an email. Send it to Jody@thisshowisogay.com. Maybe they're trying to send it to J-O-D-Y. Maybe that's the problem.
Oh, that's problematic.
So send it to J-O-D-I. @thisshowisogay.com. If you have a complaint, and if you love the show, send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. And that wraps things up for this week. Get out there, folks. Go do some incredible, incredible things. And while you're doing it, of course, remember, why be gay when you can defile the land? No, I thought you were going to say it with
me. I wasn't ready. Sorry. Defile the land.
No, get out there, folks. Go do some incredible things. Raise up the voices of your LGBT brothers and sisters, because everyone needs more of a voice. And while you're doing that, please remember, why be gay when you can be
so gay?
Each other to make it.